Hello, and welcome to the Global Product Management Talk. This is Cindy F. Solomon, your host and producer, coming to you today live from the Oakland Hills at Studio 132 with the engineer BZ Lewis. And joining me in the studio today is Guillaume DeCougas and Arabella. Hello, and Arabella just posted out to the Twitter stream a video that she took of us here in the studio. So it's very exciting today. This is the week of Valentine's Day, and you're listening to the Global Product Management Talk, which, by the way, I should play you what you're listening to. Hold on.
You are listening to the Global Product Management Talk, a regular broadcast for passionate product professionals and business people that don't get a chance to leave their desk and participate in product talks in person, so we bring product talks to you wherever you are. Every episode, we discuss different aspects of what it takes to produce successful products. Everyone is invited, including agile practitioners, user experience designers, content and community managers, business owners, CEOs, entrepreneurs, social media strategists, innovation managers, business analysts, project managers, product managers, program managers, product marketing managers, brand managers, software developers, and you, as well as everyone involved with the entire product lifecycle process from inception to sunsetting. Follow us on Blog Talk Radio. Go to www.blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. That's our website, www.PRODMGMTTALK.com. Follow us on Twitter at PRODMGMTTALK and use the hashtag to tweet answers to the questions and follow the tweets, #PRODMGMTTALK. And this is Cindy again live. So the opening music, very exciting, is courtesy of Blame Sally, www.blamesally.com. They're performing at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco on May 11th. Get your tickets now. They are a local excellent, excellent band, and I'm delighted to have permission to use their music going forward. I also want to give a shout-out to our sponsors. This episode of Global Product Management Talk brought to you by Sprintly. Don't ask how it's going. Watch how it's going with Sprintly. You can find them on the web at sprint.ly. And our platinum sponsor, the AIPMM, the Association of International Product Marketing and Management. You can find them on the web at www.aipmm.com. Follow them for product management job postings on Twitter at AIPMM. And also thank you to TripAdvisor, the world's largest travel site, enabling travelers to plan and have the perfect trip. Follow them at TripAdvisor and www.tripadvisor.com, and for careers at TripAdvisor Jobs on Twitter. So today we are talking with Guillaume DeCougas. Is that how you pronounce your name?
Yeah, that's it. Hi. Good morning.
Hi. Welcome to the studio on this beautiful morning. We're talking about the future of content marketing. And Guillaume recently spoke, well, last week on Thursday at the Startup Product Summit in San Francisco, which I had been looking forward to for many, many months, working hard on it. It was a resounding success, standing room only, excellent, excellent lineup. So why don't we share a little bit about how the day was, and you did a great presentation. And by the way, Guillaume slides are available on the web, and just go to Startup Product, go to the blog, and you'll see all the information and the notes, and the content is also available in Storify. So how was the day for you?
I think it was great. I think you did a great job. I felt the crowd was very excited, very engaged. We talked about a lot of different things around product. And, you know, to me, it was really interesting because, and it was a bit of the things I touched on my talk, which is, you know, Silicon Valley has that myth that good products don't need marketing. And ever since I've been here, I've heard that. I did grad school here at Stanford, and I'm an engineer, so I tend to believe those stories where you feel if you're doing a great product, then you're not going to need marketing. The product is going to be your marketing, and it's going to speak for itself. And I think there was a misunderstanding there. And I think, you know, having events like that where you can bring people who are caring about product, but also looking at all these different aspects, not just building it, but also finding ways to market it, build a community around it. I think that was great, and I'm glad we could talk about that.
Delighted to have you. And I know you're building a community around lean content as well. And I will be attending the meetup on Wednesday at the Scoop It headquarters in downtown San Francisco. Why don't you tell people about how they can find out about the meetup?
Yeah, they can find it's on meetup.com/leancontent. It's an interesting series, which is a bit around that as well. We started Scoop It because we felt social media was a great opportunity to tell a story for professionals and businesses to become media, and a way to give them an opportunity to create an audience, a following around topics they had expertise upon. And we realized that we were part of a series of tools and services and platforms which actually changed the way you could actually build a brand online. And we came out with this idea of lean content, which is, you know, trying to take from the ideas of the lean startup movements or methodology, which are around, you know, ideas that it doesn't take millions to actually do a startup. Now you can actually iterate and test and do things for much smaller budgets. And I think the same goes with marketing. It used to be that marketing was, it used to be advertising. Like, you know, 20, 30 years ago, marketing was really around advertising, and you needed to have millions in order to do advertising. And then, you know, if you look at what it is today, marketing is definitely, you know, more than advertising, and you can actually use social media to build your brand, to engage and develop a community. And so that's what we want to talk about. And we think there are new ways to do content marketing, which are accessible to startups, nonprofits, smaller businesses. And it doesn't take millions to do that, but it takes some methodology, the use of new tools. And that's you know, what we're trying to build here, a community giving a voice to people who are doing lean content, who might not call it this way, but who have some interesting experience to share. So, yeah, you can find it on meetup.com/leancontent, and the next one is on Wednesday at 6:30, right next to Union Square.
Excellent. And so using the lean principles was also something we applied towards building the audience for the summit, and we used all social media. Even this, the Global Product Management Talk is an experiment based on, can we only use social media and build a community worldwide? And it really all started from a tweet that I put out. I think this is our 2-year, maybe 3-year anniversary, where I tweeted out, hey, we should do a regular talk about product management issues globally. And the tweet was returned from Australia by Adrian Tan of BrainMates. And we started a weekly product management talk discussion and found out that it's very difficult to get people who are involved in pushing their products forward to show up every week at the same time and spend an hour not dealing with their own products, but talking about product management principles. And so here we are today.
Yeah, and I think you're a very interesting example. You know, 2 years ago, when we started thinking about what eventually became Scoop It, the problem we were trying to solve was, our starting point was with my co-founder, Mark, and the team. We thought about this, you know, we're tech people. We've been in tech our entire life. I personally love to write. I wanted to be a writer when I was a kid, you know, kind of, I guess, maybe a lot of teenagers out there. And when social media came, when blogging came, I realized, wow, this would be great, but I never was able to actually justify the time. And I think that was the same for a lot of busy professionals, which is, how can I justify spending hours blogging if I don't know whether people will read that, whether I'm going to be successful? So we try to think about, there's a big opportunity in social media. If you are if you're good at it, then you can have a large following, you can build an audience, and that's awesome, either for personal branding or for to develop your business brand and to educate people around your market. That's awesome. But people couldn't find an easy way to do that. And you're a good example. It takes a lot of time on Twitter or on blogging platforms to build a huge following base. And a lot of people don't find the time for that. So that's exactly the problem we wanted to solve by bringing a couple of new things. One is to focus people's time and energy on curation rather than creation. We're not saying, you know, stop creating content, but we're saying it takes a lot of time to create good content, and you're not going to be able to do good content every day. But in the meantime, you can curate content and you can enrich it with your own insight. And that's very valuable. That's a very valuable way to build an audience, especially as the web gets crowded and there is too much information for anyone to consume. And the second idea was really to use that topic-centric model. And you were a very good example as well. You started to be very focused on product management. And that's also something that I think a lot of people realized using Twitter, is if you tweet about just everything, you're not audible. If you are focused on something and people can say, I follow Cindy because she's a thought leader on product management, then that becomes a much easier way. And that's also the concept we have on Scoop.it, is you publish topics and you follow topics. So everything is topic-centric, and that's a much better way to be discovered and to discover great content.
Yeah, blogging is challenging to me also, and I've been paid as a writer, but always about products. And never blogging almost is personal. You have to give your perspective, and that was very difficult for me. It's easy for me to promote other people and to highlight the essence of what they're talking about, but to put myself in the picture, it's almost like I'm old school. We didn't talk about ourselves personally.
I totally agree with you. And that was a problem I had, which is it's very emotional to go out and publish, you know, stuff which could be very personal. And I think that's also why we felt curation was more accessible to people, because actually if you've been working for 5, 10, 15 years or more, you have an expertise in something. You're probably very good at something, the area where you have developed your job expertise. And it means a couple of things. It means, one, you're already probably reading a lot of content on your expertise. And second, it's you probably have something to say about it, which is, you know, I agree that's really important to read that piece, or I agree with part one, I disagree with the conclusion, or I totally disagree, this guy's a jerk and this is why. But, you know, it's a means of expression which is easier because you have a distance with the original content that makes you, you know, more comfortable expressing a point of view. So we feel very much that curation is not just filtering, but it's an act of expression.
And it's even more than that. As you were talking, I was thinking, I wish I could be tweeting what you're saying. Those two points are very important. And I really tweet like I'm taking notes, but I can't do that and talk. And it's even, I'm looking at you. It's really nice. I'm going to have to do this every week now, have people come in live. But there's something else about content curation. It's what Scoop.it enables you to do. And I think, you know, I'm just starting to get my stride with it, but it enables you to take the content and make distinctions, put in your own distinctions about what is being said in that content. So you are bringing in your point of view, you're able to draw references to other content, and really how I started using Twitter and what I do in terms of curation is more like crowdsourcing. I'm just going out and grabbing a whole bunch of information being said out there but about a particular subject matter. That's kind of how it started. Mm-hmm. But Scoop.it lets you be more specific. It's not crowdsourcing. It's actually curating who's saying the right stuff that you think should be being said, and then adding in your two cents to it to add additional value to it.
Yeah, I think the way to think about it is if you're If you have a specific problem, if you want to know about, you know, agile development or you know, cloud infrastructure, the real life way to know about it is to call someone who's an expert on this, have a phone conversation, have him point you to maybe 2-3 resources that you should read about that, have him comment on those. That's what would be ideal, right? If you wanted to know about a specific topic, you would want to interview an expert and have some stuff to read that he would recommend. And if you look at his Twitter feed, you might catch a bit of that, but Twitter is much more a real-time communication platform. So probably he probably already shared some great content on Twitter, but that's probably lost. If you didn't discover that in the first 20 minutes, like I think the life duration of a tweet is, you know, it's measured regularly by different surveys. It's around 20, 30 minutes, and then it's gone forever. And we wanted also to create a form of archive or repository for that content, give a chance for that content to be discovered later. You know, still maintaining a media format where you regularly publish and update, because we're talking about topics where there are some new content all the time, but be able to find it more easily. And so I think that's the way to look at this. And I think the success we have with Scoop It is you can find experts who are publishing topics. And again, experts doesn't mean it's just a tiny fraction of the population. We think everyone has some expertise, and we have a very long tail. We have more than 400,000 different topics on Scoop It right now, with, you know, close to 7 million people coming every month to read them. So you know, this scales up pretty nicely, and that's a way to, you know, find content which, you know, beyond the 20 minutes that they typically get on social media.
Excellent. So I just want to give a shout out to our tweeters. We have a bunch of people. Here is a quote: curation isn't just filtering, it's an active expression. Shout out to Allie Greer. I think these are probably all your colleagues. Emily Allen. Thank you, everyone. Mark Fusecki, is that your co-founder?
Yay.
Hi, Mark. thanks for listening. And also, I want to welcome and invite people to call in. You can call in to 323-927-2957. BZ is here. He can screen your call. You're welcome to call in and ask a question to Guillaume. And by the way, let me give you a little background. When Guillaume founded Scoop It in 2010, he wanted to create a social media platform that allows businesses to stand out in an increasingly crowded online world. Today, the company attracts more than 5 million small businesses, enterprise and professional users monthly and growing. Guillaume's previous company, MuseWave, became the leading mobile music service provider in Europe and was sold to Microsoft for $120 million in 2006. He also launched Gujet, a mobile social media which topped 1 million downloads in France at the end of 2010. He graduated with a master's in engineering at Stanford University. By the way, you can follow him on Twitter at GDECUGIS. And we're talking about Scoop It, which is at Scoop It, S-C-O-O-P-I-T, and on the web at scoop.it. So, great. So, one of the questions, the first question that we had to discuss was what are the content issues that should matter to product marketers in 2013? And, you know, a colleague, Greg Girasi, does the study of product team performance, and he is forwarding the ProdBoc, which is the product management body of knowledge, which is in development and should be coming out this year. And he asked me a while ago to write about what I saw as the future of product marketing. And so, Greg, if you're listening, here's the blog post. And definitely content curation is the future of product marketing. So product marketers are people on the product management team whose focus is to understand the market, to be doing research and bringing that data and information back inside to the engineers and to the product management process, but also to be driving the narrative around the product and to be providing the sales tools to the outbound marketers and to the salespeople. So content,
yeah.
Bundling content, repurposing content, content about the product and forwarding the narrative and having it be a consistent narrative is what product marketers are charged with doing.
Yeah, and so I think a way to frame this is that products are only successful if they solve a problem. And usually they bring a new solution to an existing problem. So it's about innovation, and so it means it's about education. And at first, I think, I've been, through, three different startups, lots of different products. Every time you start with a product, there's some research involved. And that means getting access to content. Because the first person you're going to ever educate on the product is you. If you don't get yourself educated, there's no way you can find an innovative solution to a problem. And so we're talking about educating yourself. And then as you start building the product, educating others, creating that narrative you describe about a product. And all of that involves content. So I think, the role content plays in the product development cycle is stronger and stronger. And I think, if you take our own example at Scoop.it, we started on this about a bit more than 2 years ago, thinking about, what are the relationships between social and content discovery. And initially, for some historical reasons, we were focused on mobile. And we researched a lot. We talked to a lot of people. We read a lot of blog posts. And that's how we understood that the problem we were trying to solve was actually not a mobile problem, but a web problem. We discovered a lot of different things. We discovered that, for instance, it wasn't so much about we couldn't solve the problem of content consumption if we didn't solve the problem of content publishing. So if I take our own example, there's been a lot of reading involved. There's been a lot of curation involved for ourselves. But then, as you start doing your research, you realize that you become one of the most knowledgeable experts on your topic. Like, think about it differently. If you're doing a product and you're not the most knowledgeable person on that innovation on that product, then it means a competitor is probably doing a better job than you are. So you need to become an expert at what you're doing. And then a way to actually educate your market and start building a community of ambassadors and influential people who can give a voice to your product is also using content. So it's a natural extension of the research you've been doing. And I think, that's where I see a great fit with products, with the conference you've been putting together, with the product management community, is, I think you have to go through a lot of things that, we call curation, and that turns naturally into a content marketing strategy. Even though you might not call it this way, it could be called evangelization or education.
And thanks for mentioning the SF Product Talks is the monthly meetup where over 1,000 members now. It's the Startup Product Talks meetup in San Francisco, which looks like it may be growing to a San Mateo location and in other locations as well. But it's part of a movement of product management visibility, gaining traction. There's always been product managers. There's always been people passionate about product excellence involved with products who weren't necessarily the engineers or the makers, but they were everyone else who saw that, once you have the product, how do you get it out there? How do you reach the audience? Who is the right audience? How do you segment that market? How do you tell the right story to the right people at the right time?
Yeah. And I think if you look at some of the great successes of Silicon Valley, it's not just about getting a product in the sense of, feature complete, code complete implementations, but building a story around it. Look at Airbnb. It's doing something that already existed, but it's like framing it in a different context with a story of those guys, who started renting a room in their apartment. So there's a narrative around that which makes the product, not just a product, but also a community and a story. And you have to do that with content. And I think, again, it starts at the very beginning when you start to educate yourself on the problem you're trying to fix.
So I'm being rude here because I'm tweeting and I'm talking to you. So
that's okay.
I apologize. And also, I shake my head a lot and I realize nobody can see that. But I want to give a shout out to our tweeters, Centrail, welcome, and Social Intel, welcome. Let's see, I think everyone is agreeing. So Centrail says, curation is indeed the future of product marketing. An old CPG guy agrees. All right, what's CPG?
Consumer product goods, or?
Yeah, I guess.
That's okay. My guess.
Okay, Centrail, you have to... Martin Smith, he's marketing director at Atlantic BT, coming, tweeting from Durham, North Carolina. Welcome, Marty. And Social Intel says, in today's world, online education equals content. So by the way, if you are listening and you'd like to tweet, use the # #PRODMGMTTALK. You are listening to the Global Product Management Talk. I'm doing the half hour shout out. You're welcome to call in and speak with our guest, Guillaume Dukakis, CEO of ScoopIt. The number to call in is 323-927-2957. So our next question is, Q2, how can product marketers conquer content marketing once and for all? It seems like a huge challenge.
Yeah, it is a huge challenge. I don't know if conquering is the right word, but so what I think is, I think we touched a bit around that. It's like if you're trying to think about a product being a part of the things you need to bring to be successful, a community being another thing, and an ecosystem to educate your market being another. I think you want to be finding ways to be sharing those stories and building that narrative, which are going to be efficient. And that's where maybe we go back to this concept of lean content, is that a lot of people who are innovative at product, being in a startup or even in a big organization, don't usually start with big budgets. So I want to leave aside the people who start with a $20 million budget a year. And I want to focus on people who are either doing that in a startup environment or in a big company but with limited budgets. If you look at the whole set, the amount of content, the quality of content, the work you have to do with content, it can be overwhelming. And that goes back to the starting point we had back 2 years ago, which we felt, we understood, how people who were successful with blogging or companies who were successful with blogging could have some benefits. The problem was like, how do you get from where you are right now, which is, zero, to that level of engagement? And so in order to create that engagement, you need content, but content is valuable content is difficult to create. And so that's where curation comes into play. And that's where, this framework for lean content that we're trying to define, of which curation is just one element, is trying to talk about what are the things that people can do with limited time and budget to be efficient. We think curation is interesting in that matter because you're already doing it. You're already reading, researching. We talked about that. But also curation will help you identify what is the original content that you might want to produce yourself. We're not opposing curation and creation. We actually think they complete one another very nicely. And, I'm going to give you a particular example. There was this announcement by Facebook around Graph Search 2 to 3 weeks ago. And a lot of people were talking about, and of course that touches us at ScoopIt. It's about the, new ways of discovering content using social media. So it's connected to what we're doing. A lot of the things you could write on Facebook Graph Search initially were around the fight between Facebook and Google around search, or, Facebook bashing posts about, Facebook doesn't innovate anymore, that thing is not going to work. And by curating all of this, I was able to find an angle to a story that I decided to write, which was that Graph Search to me was around trying to build an interest graph, but it created at the same time a tension with privacy. So I wrote that story, pitched it to Fast Company, and they picked it up and published it. So this is an example that shows that if you're curating content, that it will help you identify areas where you're going to be able to produce original content, not a repetition of something that people already wrote in a better way, but something that you can bring with original ideas, original vision. And so that's a very lean way to come out with ideas for content creation. The other thing that I want to talk about is how you can leverage platforms which have already some distribution to be able to distribute your own content. This was actually another example. Fast Company is a well-respected media, and publishing that piece on their site was actually a very interesting thing for us, because it gave us a distribution that, even our blog, even if it's successful right now, doesn't really have yet.
So I have a question about branding. Mm-hmm. And this is an issue for big companies, and why I think they were slow to blogging, and even why they have all these rules about maybe less and less, but you see it in the big companies about who can blog and who can't blog, and it has to be under their branding. Mm-hmm. So is that anti to this whole idea of curation? I mean, this is really, well, I'm trying to understand this, because if I am curating what other people wrote, I'm essentially promoting them under my brand. I'm yeah. almost vetting them and saying, this is worth reading. I suggest you read it. I found value in it. Here's why. But I'm also promoting them.
Yeah. So the way to think about this is there's a few things to say. First of all, I think people respect the source. It's not so much about where you end as it is about where you start. Because people know there are lots of great content out there. The question is, how do you find that? So because of this information overload situation we're in, where there's a gazillion blog posts and YouTube videos uploaded every day, there's a shift of value from content creation to content curation. Now, you're right in saying that if you're just curating on, say, Twitter, and pointing and sharing URLs and directing people to TechCrunch, to Fast Company, to the New York Times, then it's going to be very hard for you to get branding results out of this. And this is also why at Scoop.it we came out with this concept of having a platform where you could do your curation, because now Scoop.it topic pages that you create are actually your hub for your curated content. So instead of driving people away from you, which is what you do when you share a link to a TechCrunch article, you drive people to your Scoop.it page, have a chance to tell them who you are, why you've been sharing that piece of content, give your own insights, connect the dots maybe with other previous stories. They can see all of the other stories you've been sharing on that same topic. And so it drives the engagement up a lot. On average, visitors to Scoop.it pages see 3 pages. So that's a lot. The only thing you can achieve by tweeting a link to a media property is 1 click, and that's not to you, that's to them. So think about having people visit 3 of your content on your page. And so that's also where we derived our business model. As we started building those pages, of course, those pages in the free versions are on Scoop.it. You have your profile picture, you can describe yourself, and that's already good, and that's very good to a lot of people. But for companies, you're right in saying they want to have their brand on this, and that's something that came very early on, even before we did our public launch throughout the private beta. Businesses were saying, oh, this is great, can I brand this, can I integrate
can I white
that?
Label it?
Yeah, can I white label it, can I put that on my website? And that's actually how we came out with our business model, which is, our Scoop.it business plans, which starts at $79 a month, which gives you an opportunity to brand that and put that on your website. So you're right into, I think there's a couple of ways to summarize this. First, don't underestimate the fact that value has shifted from creation to curation. Doesn't mean that creation is worthless. It has great value, but curation definitely has some value. So if you're curating, you're going to bring value. That's going to create goodwill to your audience. So that's a great way to derive some goodwill and brand awareness. But you're right. If you're just sending people away from you all the time and never to you, you're going to lose a branding opportunity.
Sure. There's a lot of value in curation. Chris Berner, who was a speaker also at Startup Product Summit, started Startup Digest. Basically, it was an email they put out every week saying, here's five or less than 10 blogs we read this week that we want to share with you. And basically, people subscribed to the email, and then they were Bosch. So yeah. Now they're developing a new product, Group Tie, but they were curating under, yeah. And they built a brand just around sharing other people's content through email. I mean, it was pretty basic.
I think it's a great example that, you know, in content, less is more. So if you're able to filter and curate the right, you know, you save a lot of time to your audience. You bring a lot of value. And those links still today, and I love this email, I read it every Monday, it still points, you know, to other properties, but they have a hub, which is their email, is their own brand. And that's what you want to create. You want to have something on the web that has your name on it, which points people to other places. And I think that's a great way to provide a really valuable service, derive some brand awareness and goodwill for your brand.
So I've subscribed to a list of content strategists. And these are academics. These are people who are deep in content. And they used to be the technical documentation people, heavy into grammar and words. And I love how, I don't want to say anal, but how specific they get around proper grammar and proper content techniques. But one of the things that you pointed to is filtering, that what's important is filtering the right content. And I thought of them because editing is a key skill that is very hard to achieve, because it, like you said, less is more, and it takes an editing ability to determine what is worth sharing. Here's the content I'm pointing to, but what is the essence here? So let me save you the time of having to read the whole thing, and let me just point to what is the most important salient points here.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, you know, so editing, curating is something which is important, valuable, and there are people who've been talking about the theory of this, and this sometimes can be impressive. You hear people saying, you know, editing is really difficult, but something we've trying to educate people around with this concept of lean content is, in the same way that, you know, experience teaches you a lot and repetition makes you good, the same applies to content. What is the idea of the lean startup? The idea of the lean startup is, you can be, you know, thinking about this for 12 months and still come out with nothing. And you're going to be beaten by kids who are going to go fast, go get a product, get a prototype out there. Not perfect, but they will iterate from this. They will learn a lot more. So experience brings you a lot more knowledge than, you know, thinking in a vacuum. And so we want to apply the same to content. We want to say to people, look, even if you think you're not going to be good initially, do it. That's a way to try to learn, to experiment and be better. And I think what we're doing with Scoop.it and some other platforms like, you know, SlideShare are doing as well, is that we're lowering the barrier for those people to get in the content publishing, become content publishers. If we're lowering that barrier, then we make your first trial at it, you know, something that will take you a minute or two, or maybe 5 minutes. So anyone can do it. Are you going to be great at the beginning? Probably no. But because we make it easy to try and make it easy to repeat, then we give you a chance to become great and brilliant, and, as we say, to shine on the web by, you know, having this iteration, which comes very naturally. So yes, we're talking about something very noble. Editing is a word that can be impressive. Publishing is a word that can be impressive. And curation is a word that can be impressive. But we're trying to come out with a platform that makes it easy for you to try, to repeat, and to measure, and to become eventually, and very rapidly, pretty awesome. And again, remember that you're bringing the value initially because you're an expert at what you're doing. So it's not like you don't have authority to speak about that. So I think, you know, the time of the gatekeepers is gone. You know, we're all authorized to speak about what we're passionate about and our expertise.
So we're really talking about information, but I just want to bring in the experience of using the product. And it actually is fun. And as you were saying, you enable people to start doing it and then get better and better, master it. And I find that's the same with using the tool. It's very easy to share a link. And it's also very cool when people follow the link back, it highlights the page that you sent the link to. It almost jumps out at you. And behind that are links to other things that you've shared. So it really showcases that piece of information, and it does entice them to stay on your page to look at other things that you've done. And also, the more I find that I use the tool, the more I understand how to use it. So it's real easy to share links, but then to be more intentional about it and actually start choosing the other content. It's always, every time I go there, it's introducing other things for me to read that I hadn't already found by myself. And then I find people start following me and start introducing to me things they're suggesting that I might be interested in. So it's almost like I have a team now of curators looking for content that's much more powerful than just Google Alerts, which I have a lot set up also.
Yeah. So I think you're describing perfectly, you know, what we've been trying to get people, you know, to with the product. Look, being a good social media publisher is tough. So, and we've been trying to look at the different stages that people had to go through and to become that. And that's really the problem we've been trying to solve, is how do we take a professional and make it good at being a social media publisher? That's hard because they don't have a lot of time. But the great thing is they're experts, so they have knowledge and they are smart people. And so we like to think about three stages. The first thing that people like about Scoop.it is that it's easy to try, and we lower that barrier to make it, you know, cost less, like a few minutes for people to try it. That's phase number one. They feel, oh, I thought Twitter was, you know, I had to find links and find content, and now Scoop.it is helping me find that content, so I save a lot of time. That's phase one. Phase two is they realize they can actually get more traffic, more engagements, so they see their numbers go up, and they feel, oh, unlike, you know, what I was doing on my blog where, you know, maybe only my mother was reading that, now I have actually some people who are seeing this. They, you know, a metric we put together very prominently is the number of views you have on your pages. And we have, you know, on average, people reach, 100 views on their pages in a matter of days or a few weeks. So much faster than on any other platforms we've measured against. And then phase number three.
Oh, thank you, BZ. So I didn't read about Scoop.it. I'll read it and then I'll... Scoop.it lets you share ideas that matter and shine on the web through beautiful topic pages. Collect relevant content and add your insight to attract an avid audience. Whether you're a professional or educator representing a business or nonprofit, Scoop.it will help you efficiently and effectively build your online presence. It's a one-stop shop for social media and content curation publishing. So when you post on your topic page, you can easily, with one click, share it to all of your other social customization pages, including Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Google. Instead of having to go to each of those places to post, you just post it and Scoop.it, and it will send it out to those.
Yeah, you know, in other words, it's a way to build a media online in a much simpler way than writing your own blog. It gives you a online property, which is like an online magazine where you collect and share the stories you find relevant for, you know, the topic you want to be showing your expertise on. And what I was going to say is that phase three is really around building your community, and you've described that. Is you know, I think what people see in Scoop.it initially is a tool, but then the value really comes from after you've saved some time, you've gotten more traffic. then you realize there's a community of people around the product that can actually empower you, you know, make you discover other types of content and also amplify your own work, because they will recoup the content you've curated. So building this community of interest, and if you think about the vision we have for Scoop.it is that the web is moving from a very people-centric social graph world where, you know, I connect with people I already know, that's Facebook. I connect with people I've worked with, that's LinkedIn. It's moving to a web of interest where I connect with people I don't know, like maybe listeners to this podcast that I've never met, but who share the same interest. And that's what you've been building, and people have been slowly building this, and we want to help them, build that faster and accelerating that, and being able to federate and build their community of interests around their favorite topics.
That's very interesting and totally aligned with when I started doing Twitter chats, when I started exploring, again, from a crowdsourcing point of view. My hypothesis was that communities are built out of shared interests, that people will come together because of their shared passion for knowledge about specific topics. And so that is seen in tribes and in knowledge communities, or they're called communities of practice in the academic world. But the difficulty is sustaining that. Like, people might initially show up, and that'll grow, and then they'll get bored, or they'll move on.
That's the problem with groups, if you think about it.
Yeah.
You know, Facebook groups and LinkedIn groups, they usually, you know, start, and then they fade, and they're hard to scale.
They're hard to scale. They're hard to sustain once the novelty wears off.
Yeah. So, I think if you look at finding ways to, engage them constantly with content, we already have that model. It's called a media. The way to get people constantly engaged on a certain topic and being able to, you know, find value on a regular basis is called the media. It could be a radio station, it could be a magazine, it could be a newspaper, but we already know that format, and that's not a group. And I think so the problem becomes, like, how do you help people build a media online in a much easier way? And then, I think that's what we're bringing.
So I have a question about Scoop.it that I think I don't understand, and I've grappled with this, so I apologize ahead of time because I didn't set you up that I was going to ask this.
That's okay.
But you get to start a topic or own a topic, but what if someone else already owns that topic? It's almost like you're getting a domain name, and so I want the domain names that, you know, I want the topic that I feel most expertise in, but somebody already had it.
Yeah.
So I didn't know, how do I deal with that?
So we did that on purpose. And we know that some people are feeling, oh, I had this great idea for my topic and somebody already has that. And, you know, we feel we're serving a long tail of interests, first of all, so that, you know, you can refine your name and probably make it more specific. But the other idea was that we feel there is, there should be a way to brand your story to make it specific that is very valuable. And we also feel that we're not building an absolute truth here. We're not building Wikipedia. If you're looking at Wikipedia, you can have only one page on Napoleon or, you know, the Second World War. Because Wikipedia is trying to use the community to come out with the most, recognized truths, but it's one absolute. We're not. We're assuming the fact that we're totally biased. I mean, our users are totally biased, and that's good. Media creation has never been around being objective. If you look at the history of media,
they lie about objectivity, but
well, you know, I don't want to be too
based on results.
But look, you know, the first books were written, you know, to promote religions, right? And then we had media to promote
history is written by the,
you know, ideas like socialism,
right,
and Marxism. So it's always been, you know, a biased way. So we want this also to be biased. And so we don't think there should be just one page on product management, but there should be a twist. And so the way to think about it is, if product management is already done by somebody, what's your twist? So, and we think that putting our users in that context, and we ask the question, you know, why does it matter to you? And that's a way to brand your own narrative around product management or architecture or design or whatever you're going to be curating on Scoop.it. Give it a spin that is reflecting your own bias, and that's going to make your topic sound more human. And also people are going to look at it from that angle, and that's going to be valuable. That's going to be creating some discussions.
And so there's room for more than one thought leader on every topic.
Yeah, and we actually want... We actually thought people were maybe going to be competing with one another and feeling very competitive about it. But as you described, it's actually people see that as a community of interests. And actually, if you think about, because we're a long tail community and people are talking about some niche topics with precise areas of expertise, another expert in your domain is more likely to be a friend or a resource to you or someone who can enrich you and you can collaborate with than a direct competitor. If you think about, if we're talking about music, you know, you could say people maybe are competitive or, you know, sport, but we're not talking about celebrities here in like, you know, mainstream celebrities. We're talking about precise areas of expertise, and there can be multiple experts, and they usually... Think of it about, you know, conferences. People who are experts and talk at conferences, they usually appreciate one another. They help one another. And yes, sometimes it can be competitive, but there's some form of collaboration that can work as well.
That's right, and they're in the same space. So thank you. Now I understand that idea. And also, thank you, Arabella said, you can also redirect a subdomain to Scoop.it business topic pages if you want a more unique URL. So can you explain that?
Yeah, so that's one of the things we bring with our business version is typically back to your point about if I'm a company, I want to brand this, and if I'm curating all of that content, sharing all of that content, I want this to be seen as something that is brought to you by my specific brand. And so that's one of the things we enable with our Scoop.it business plans, which is you can have your own domain on this. So it could be news.mycompany.com or whatever subdomain you set it up with. And that URL is, of course, your own unique URL.
Good to know. Very good to know. Okay. Welcome. Shout out to the tweeters. Ubaid Salim is coming from Northern Virginia. Welcome. He's a digital executive who tweets about product management. And he says, there's room for more than one voice on a topic. Thank you.
That's a good way to frame it.
Yes, very, very good way. And Emily Allen had said earlier, you should engage users and build your brand. Don't just tweet links to Fast Company, TechCrunch, New York Times, but send them there via your site's content. Great, great. And Jennifer Mira had said, surrounding your content with a narrative and story is what creates a community around your product. Exactly. Thank you. And Allie Greer had said earlier, if you're sending people away from your brand all the time and never back to you, you're losing a branding opportunity. That's right. If you're sending them to links outside of your ownership. So one of the questions we had in the lineup of questions was, are you investing enough in content marketing? And I think we've addressed the high costs of writing, creating content. But what about social media paralysis? Do you have social media paralysis? What do you mean by this? Is this about information overload?
I'm not sure I understand the question. You mean people who are, you know, frozen by the difficulty of social media, or?
I guess we were asking the Twitter audience if they felt overwhelmed by all of the different properties and all of the different venues that they have to put content in. I'll tell you, when we were leading up to the summit last week, when we were trying to figure out where is the audience, where should we spend the most time, and we were using Scoop.it because it let us cover every place.
Yeah.
We didn't have to worry about just posting in one place. And there were a couple of days where I went crazy on Twitter. I just devoted the day. I'm going to tweet all day. And my co-producer had a fit that you know, just too many tweets all at once.
I think there can be that as well. You're right. I think for a lot of people, they are trying to figure out, you know, how to use those different networks out there. I mean, if you look at it, you know, I still have stories of people 2 years ago or even you know, more recently, people say, oh, I don't get Facebook. I don't know why I should be on Facebook. Probably no one who is listening to that podcast, but probably in your network or in your family, you have people like that. And think about it. We're trying to tell them now Facebook is not enough. You have Twitter, you have LinkedIn, you have Google Plus, you have Pinterest, Tumblr. And yeah, I think it can be impressive to people. And on this, I think, you know, what we're trying to say to people is it's likely that you don't have to be on all those platforms. But what's a good way to test? And by having this cross posting, and it's also likely you have to be on more than one. So what we're trying to bring as a solution on Scoop It, with Scoop It is the ability to cross post and save a lot of time doing that, and then again be able to test. And again, coming back to this idea of being lean, is if you have a tool like Scoop It that helps you publish to all of these platforms at once, then you can test and iterate and see what works for you, and maybe you'll find out, oh, the best platforms for me are LinkedIn and Facebook pages, or Twitter and Google Plus. And again, we're trying to lower the cost of, you know, coping with that, which makes it less impressive for people. And that way, I think we're bringing a solution. But I think, you know, the message I want to get at is, you know, try. You know, this is by trying that you're going to be able to make your own decisions on this. And so we want to lower the cost of trying, and also the cost of feeling that you haven't succeeded.
Yes, and that's what the whole lean startup kind of movement is about, which I really love because it's liberating. It's like you don't have to be perfect, mm-hmm. and you don't have to have it all figured out because that's not reality. I mean, really, if you really want to talk about what happens in startups, they're messy.
Yeah, yeah I know.
You cannot stay pristine and deal and be successful with starting up anything.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've, you know, my own story with, you know, building product, you know, I'm 41, so, you know, I started my first company. There was no lean startup. The word didn't exist. And I don't think our first products were very lean. We took a lot of time to build them, and sometimes there were failures, and sometimes there were success. In MusiWave, you know, we're doing music on mobile phones. Our first product was miserable. It was really a total failure. It was about you know, having people call in a voice server to listen to 30-second clips of music. I mean, it was really bad. And when we worked on GoodJet, that second startup, I think, you know, we had to relearn on how to do lean stuff as well. We spent a lot of time arguing with one another around you know, what we should do, what type of feature we should be doing, and sometimes we were debating for 3-6 months when it would have been much easier to go and try out and do it and test it and then, you know, change it if it didn't work and A/B test and stuff like that. And I think that's something we learned the hard way by you know, not being fast enough on that first product, and that we applied in a good sense when we were doing Scoop It. And I think a lot of that applies to content again.
I'm just tweeting out my Scoop It page. It just occurred to me that I have a couple of examples. Okay. Wow, and so we're to the end of the hour, and welcome my community manager that just came in, and Sashi Naik, who talked about a traditional library was about finding trusted information, which even using that was difficult. So Scoop It is a better tool than the traditional library.
I don't know about that, but
well, these are
I love libraries, but I think it's doing something new to the sharing of knowledge. Yeah.
Well, so I want to say thank you so much to the tweeters, to the community, and the Twitter transcript will be available following the talk in the resources. By the way, the resources are posted on the Blog Talk Radio site with this episode, which will be available on demand, and I can give it to you as a widget, and also the video that Arabella took of us live in the studio. So you can follow us on Blog Talk Radio, and to find out who's coming up next week at www.blogtalkradio.com/prodmgmttalk. Thank you very much, Guillaume, for joining us in person in the studio. That's very exciting. And thank you for sharing with us about Scoop It. I will be at the meetup on Wednesday, the Lean Content Meetup at the Scoop It headquarters in San Francisco. And looking forward to it because you have a couple of speakers that look very interesting, but it's always a great meetup. And thank you for Arabella for joining us in the studio as well. Thank you to our sponsors, the AIPMM, the Association of International Product Management and Marketing. Join me on Friday at the webinar where we are talking about the difference between product management and project management. Go to AIPMM.com for the webinar series. To register for that and follow us at Startup Product Talks, sfproducttalks.com at our meetup to find out more about the Startup Product Summit. And I was just told that we're going to do it again in June. So, okay. Well,
that's good.
And thank you, Blame Sally, at Blame Sally, for the excellent music. Looking forward to seeing you perform at the on May 11th at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco. Go to www.blamesally.com. Thank you, BZ Lewis in Studio 132. And this is Cindy F. Solomon signing off. See you next week on the Global Product Management Talk.